This is your reminder that processing grief is an ongoing, non-linear journey, one that takes us across the varied landscape of our emotional world. So be kind to yourself, because navigating these emotions is an act of courage. Blessed are those who face their sorrow with courage, for they shall feel their true strength. I'm Nina Hielenda, Franciscan sister, spiritual director, and founder of Dancing Spirit Tours. It wasn't that long ago that I lacked the self-awareness and inner freedom to grow my relationship with the divine. Fast forward past a lot of lessons learned, I now have a spirituality that gives me more joy, meaning, and connection than I ever thought possible. I created the Holy Rebels podcast to give you simple, actionable strategies to help you trust your gut, develop your intuition, and stay grounded when life gets hard. If you're a spiritual seeker or a mystic in the making, you're in the right place, my friend. Let's get started. Welcome back to the Holy Rebels podcast. I'm so happy that you're here because I'm passionate about today's topic. We're exploring a series about the Beatitudes, 8 keys to happiness, invitations to deepen your intimacy with the divine, and mystical laws that help you tap into and feel connected to the power of your purpose. This is the 3rd episode in the series, so we're diving right into the 2nd Beatitude today. I recommend that you listen to these episodes in order because they build on one another. The introductory episode talks about how we need to approach the Beatitudes in order to unlock their hidden meanings and gifts. So I highly recommend you listen to that one first. Let's now turn to the 2nd Beatitude, the 2nd key to happiness. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Like all the other Beatitudes, this one serves as a gift for navigating the complexities of the human experience. This Beatitude speaks to us, especially when we're grieving. It could be the passing of a loved one. It could be the end of a significant chapter in your life, or perhaps a heart-wrenching personal disappointment, or even a transition from one season of life to another. As you well know, when you're mourning, it can be almost unbearable. Your heart can feel like it's been shattered into a million pieces. There's a psychologist and grief advocate named Megan Devine, and she says, "There are losses that rearrange the world, deaths that change the way you see everything. Grief that tears everything down. Pain that transports you to an entirely different universe, even while everyone else thinks nothing has really changed." We live in a broken world, don't we, my friend? And inevitably, everyone's journey eventually finds its way to sorrow. We live in a world that's marked by loss, so grief is something that's to be expected. But so often, we try to avoid grief, don't we? We are surprised when it happens to us. We try to rush through it. We try to go around it. But face it, experience it, that's hard work. There are 2 concurrent emotional experiences that run parallel through our lives. One is sorrow, and the other is joy. That's part of our human existence. It makes me think of St. Augustine when he said, "Teach me to know myself, that I may know you." If there are parts of ourselves that we're ignoring or avoiding, we're going to be incomplete in our ability to really know what the sacred is. The sacred wants to reveal itself to us because beingness wants to become conscious of itself. That's how evolutionary consciousness works. The blessing is that the divine is present in the places within us that even we are afraid to go. And that includes sorrow. You're blessed when you fear you've lost what is most dear to you, because only then can you be embraced by the one most dear to you. The blessing is that when you mourn, when you're present with your grief, comfort will come. It makes me think of the Jewish tradition of mourning. It's called the Shiva, where the community visits the grieving family just to offer their presence. And it's a period that lasts for 7 days. Shiva literally means seven. It's beautiful, isn't it? We can never understand someone else's pain, but we can offer our presence, because one thing that grief does is that it isolates us. Grief is lonely. It often feels too big to be expressed. Like if you allow grief to exist, if you give in to it, the pain will become like an echo chamber, amplifying your sorrow, making it a kind of all-consuming monster that will devour you into a black hole that you'll never escape. So we resist our grief, of course, because we're terrified that it's way too big to hold. When I was 16, I witnessed an accident up close that will forever be etched into my memory. It was night, a van ahead of me, its headlights trying to see through the fog. The road was dark. Suddenly, a chilling screech cut through the silence. The brakes of the van slammed hard, but it was a moment too late. A pedestrian was hit, sent soaring into the air, a horrifying 15 feet. The body hit the unforgiving cement with a sickening thud. The scene unfolded with a dreadful surrealness, gruesome in its stark reality. The woman accompanying the unfortunate man was frozen in disbelief, and then reality set in. And when it did, it was as if time stood still for her and everyone in her vicinity. A heart-wrenching wail pierced the air, a primal scream from the depths of her being. I'll never forget that moment. It was a sound that bore the rawness of human pain, an animalistic outcry of a soul suddenly plunged into a void of grief and horror. These are the moments when you are starkly reminded of the unpredictability of life, the devastating impact of a single moment. It's a potent reminder that no matter how much control we think we have, there are forces beyond our reach nudging us towards the realization of our inherent vulnerability. I didn't tell anyone. I know it's weird, but my brain, it compartmentalized what happened. After the police interview, I went home. I said hi to my mom. Remember, I was 16. And then I went to sleep. I tried to forget what I saw. There's an innate tendency to push pain away, to seal it off in some hidden corner of our hearts. But you've got to somehow find those places where your grief is allowed to be as bad as it really is. Because your pain needs space. The more you can let it spread out, the more you can allow your pain to expand, to unfurl in all its ugliness, the more you can be with it. And when you can simply witness the hurting animal within you and allow your pain to exist, it somehow softens. It softens. It's like a miracle. There's nothing you need to do with your pain. Just let it exist. Tend to yourself inside it. Put your hand on your heart. Wail if you have to. Give yourself care, my friend. That's so different from trying to heal your grief. You can't fix your pain because it's not a deficiency. Pain is not a problem to be fixed or a wound to be healed. It's a testament of your capacity to love. Grief is proof of your capabilities to care. If you can be with your grief here in this moment of surrender, when all you can do with the energy you have left is pray, God help me, that's when something remarkable happens. Your prayer is a catalyst. It's as if a channel within you opens and an inflowing river of grace streams into your heart. It's God. It's the divine softly soothing the fragments of your brokenness. Have you ever experienced this? When it happens, it feels like a miracle. You feel seen and loved through and through by the universe. This is the second beatitude. Ripe are those who are coming apart at the seams, for they shall be knit back together. I know that sometimes it feels like you're alone, but none of us are truly ever alone, because suffering is a shared human experience. And if you can allow yourself to mourn, if you can hold space for your suffering heart, then you not only find comfort from a higher source, but you'll find that empathy and support from people around you shows up. People who have also walked the path of sorrow. In a way, this beatitude emphasizes the beauty of vulnerability. It teaches us that by acknowledging our pain, we're inviting healing energies to flow into our lives. It's a process of catharsis, a way to release the pent-up emotions that weigh us down. And there's a hidden gift in this too, because your capacity to hold compassion for others grows immensely. Looking back on my life, I feel grateful for periods of grief because they've expanded my capacity to feel and to build emotional resilience. I've discovered how to navigate through the waves of sorrow, and this empowers me to be there for others who are also going through the same. Sometimes your personal grief transforms into a gift of empathy and support that you can extend to others in their time of need. Sometimes it's us who ends up being the comforter. This, in its truest essence, is compassion. The Latin root of the word compassion means to suffer with another, and that's exactly what our experiences of grief allow us to do. So we have to acknowledge our pain rather than suppress it, because it's in allowing your vulnerability to exist that you create a space for your own healing and growth to take place. Trying to suppress sorrow only serves to extend it. It's like trying to hold back a river with your bare hands. It's not only an overwhelming struggle, but a futile one. And more significantly, repressing grief is detrimental because you're ignoring your need for comfort. You're essentially denying yourself an opportunity of a comforting encounter with the divine or with someone who loves you. Speaking from personal experience, I've put walls up to shield myself from grief, and it all stems from fear. I was afraid that it's never going to get better, or that the best is behind me now, or afraid of what the future might hold. So I ignored all those emotions because I was so afraid of what would happen if I allowed myself to just feel. But fear is a completely false motivator, right? It'll lead us to do desperate things or betray our own integrity. Here's the deal, though. There's no need for fear. I mean, think about it. The life force that created you, that's got you here today, is closer to you than you are to yourself. It's like a built-in support system, perpetually ready to have your back. And that's something I've been reminded of time and time again. The phrase, "do not be afraid," rings loud and clear as the most repeated phrase in Scripture. Guess how many times this phrase appears in the Bible? Do not be afraid. Guess how many? 365 times. As in 365 days in a year. It's like a daily reminder that it's going to be okay. Do not be afraid. Trust the universe. You're not alone in your struggles. But sometimes fear can sneak up on us. We might find ourselves grappling with the realities of change. These times in our lives when we're accompanied by a sense of loss, a sense of mourning for the familiar that we've left behind. Imagine it like this. You're traversing from one season of your life to another. Maybe you're uprooting your life to move to a new city. Or maybe you've just retired. Or perhaps you're stepping into the beautiful world of parenthood for the first time. These transitions, as exciting as they may be, they do come with their own melancholy. It's like bidding farewell to a dear friend, knowing that things won't be the same again. You've been cocooned comfortably in a season, and now you're emerging into the unknown, leaving the shell of your old self behind. Think about it. When you relocate, you're trading the familiarity of your community, the sense of home that you've built, for a new, unfamiliar place. When you retire, it's not just the end of a career, but it's like stepping into a winter phase of your life, a season of rest and reflection. And when you become a parent, yes, of course, it's a joyous, miraculous journey, but there's also a poignant goodbye to the carefree maiden part of you. These life transitions, as beautiful as they are, they're natural, but they're also bittersweet. They come with their own sense of grief, a grief that's subtle yet profound. It's a gentle reminder of the delicate balance of beginnings and endings, joy and sorrow, the march of time. Have you ever been grieving a loss, and then suddenly you find yourself unexpectedly immersed in a forgotten wound from the past? The experience of dealing with one loss can often open the floodgates to past sorrow, as if one incident acts as a catalyst, sparking a cascade of memories that wash over you and leave you in a sea of grief. Sometimes the trigger isn't personal. Sometimes it's innocuous, like a scene from a movie or a song or a story on your feed or something. Something like on the surface that holds no apparent connection to your loss, and yet it manages to somehow stir up these dormant feelings of sorrow. This is a testament to the depth of human emotion. For instance, my encounter with that roadside accident in my teenage years, the shock, the horror, the helplessness I felt witnessing the inconsolable grief of a stranger, a wailing woman whose world had just been shattered in an instant. That deeply unsettling experience remained unprocessed in my subconscious for a very long time. In fact, after that night of the incident, I never thought about it again. It wasn't until I went through a heartbreak in my mid-20s that those suppressed feelings came rushing to the surface. I came home one day to find that my boyfriend's things were gone. And as soon as it clicked what was happening, I collapsed to the floor. and I found myself screaming in sorrow. I recoil at the memory because I didn't even know that my body could make those sounds. It felt as though I was having, like, an exorcism. I must have dissociated because I wasn't even crying about my ex. I was suddenly remembering the wailing woman from the accident and the raw grief that took her and my overwhelming feeling of utter helplessness as a witness. These intense experiences of grief can be like a river of sorrow. Grief and joy are both intricately interconnected in our emotions and in our memories. The way one loss can act as a spark, igniting a latent sorrow within us, it shows us how deeply we internalize our experiences. It's a reminder that processing grief is an ongoing non-linear journey, one that takes us across the varied landscape of our emotional world. So be kind to yourself, my friend, because navigating these emotions is an act of courage. Blessed are those who face their sorrow with courage, for they shall feel their true strength. We learn to understand our anguish, not to shun it. We learn to see our grief as an essential part of our human experience. And most importantly, we learn that it is okay to feel sorrow. It is okay to mourn, for it is through mourning that we find comfort. Dave Brisbane expertly translates this beatitude from Greek to English. He says, "Fortunate are those who lament, for they will hear the voice of God calling them back home." I love that. Fortunate are those who lament, for they will hear the voice of God calling them back home. Around the time of the accident, I buried myself in poetry anthologies, and I bookmarked this one. Perhaps you know it. It's interesting because though I never thought of the accident again, I read this poem all the time, and it just has been buried in my heart. This poem is by the great mystic Rumi, and it's been a guide for navigating grief throughout my life. It's called Shadow and Light Source Both. It goes like this. How does a part of the world leave the world? How does wetness leave water? Don't try to put out fire by throwing on more fire. Don't wash a wound with blood. No matter how fast you run, your shadow keeps up. Sometimes it's in front. Only full overhead sun diminishes your shadow. But that shadow has been serving you. What hurts you blesses you. Darkness is your candle. Your boundaries are your quest. I could explain this, but it will break the glass cover on your heart, and there's no fixing that. You must have shadow and light source both. Listen and lay your head under the tree of awe. When from that tree feathers and wings sprout on you, be quieter than a dove. Don't even open your mouth for even a coo. My friend, I truly cherish this conversation. Thank you so much for spending time with me and exploring this profound subject matter. The second beatitude has incredible wisdom and power. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Between now and next week, I invite you to reflect on the second beatitude. Blessed are those that mourn, for they shall be comforted. How does this wisdom offer you a new perspective on your grief or sorrow? Can you recall a time when you experienced comfort in your mourning? Remember, this is a deeply personal process. Spend some time journaling your thoughts or simply sit quietly with your feelings. Remember to be gentle with yourself. It's not about judging or analyzing your feelings, but simply acknowledging and respecting them. Next week, we're going to explore the third beatitude. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. I can't wait to continue our exploration of these ancient teachings. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend who might be going through a hard time right now and could use some comfort. Until next time, trust the mystic within you.